your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. In these last two segments, I am joined again by Rick Bensignor, president of Bensignor Investment Strategies, writes the institutional newsletter, Supposedly Irrelevant Factors, read by some of the most successful hedge funds in the world, and also writes a retail-focused newsletter called In the No Trader. And again, Rick did just start up a piece called 7-Eleven, where he picks no more than 7 of the 11 spider ETFs. Now, Rick, you and I always jump around to a number of the major markets and sectors, but the first comment that I want from you really just deals with all this news and information that we're getting about these markets and the valuation metrics around individual stocks and the broad averages that are quite frankly astronomical. You can look at even some valuation metrics, even for something like Tesla, and the trading value that it's at compared to its earnings, it's mind-boggling. This ties in with a bunch of tech companies too. Really across the board, we're hearing valuation metrics as being in, we need a new word for bullish territory with how high they are. What's your takeaway from hearing all these metrics about how overvalued the markets are, but they seem to just keep getting more overvalued?
Yeah, Corey. Well, I would say Tesla is in its own little category because I think the people who buy Tesla are simply buying Elon Musk and his geniusness. And the thought that in the future, this guy is just going to keep producing new and innovative ideas. Otherwise, you can't justify the price of Tesla as a stock by itself. So it's a cult type following. It sold off sharply last year at one point, but you know, it came back strongly. It's up some ridiculous amount in the last 8 weeks. That really is kind of one of those one-offs. But let's just think in terms of the broad market. The S&P is 3850-ish. Another kind of flat day today. So you had Friday, you had Intel and IBM slump. IBM was down, 10% or so on the day last I looked. But you also had some Fed upward revisions to fourth quarter GDP. So you kind of got some balanced news out there. But to me, I really look at the market and I say, look where it was on the sell-off last March, down to, 2,200 or so in the S&P, and now we're at 3,850. And the rebound was clearly fueled by the Fed, and we know it now to the extent we should have, and most of us missed the degree at which the Fed's influence was going to have on last year's market. But I would say that where we are now, we are basically priced for perfection. And that's fine as long as things come out pretty darn perfect going forward. The stock market's a forward-looking mechanism. It's priced as if things are really going to be strong in the future. None of that is based on anything going on in the world now, because along with last year, COVID continues to be a major issue, but the market has seemingly overlooked it, and the Fed helped that happen last year. But I get concerned about when something's priced for perfection, you kind of need perfection down the road for it to be the right pricing. Otherwise, we're overvalued. And given how much the market has moved up and where some of the signals are showing up on the models that I look at, I'm not aggressively buying stocks up here, especially ones that are making new highs. I'd rather buy stocks that more that I put in the value camp and recently made lows and maybe are breaking out of some chart patterns off of lows. But, I'm not going to chase after some of the key components in, let's say, the QQQ, the NASDAQ 100 or some of the big S&P names. I do think over time the market can still make its way higher. So for investors, I would remain long and hold my positions. There's been no weakness to get us out of that per se. But as far as more trading-oriented people, and I don't mean day traders in and out, but just people who are swing traders or looking to put on stuff for a few months, it is a tough thing to chase after the performance that we're seeing now. In fact, this past Tuesday, when I did my weekly podcast for StockCharts.com, I talked about the difficulty of chasing after markets that are screaming to the upside. And I even gave strategies on how to play it. So for those of you out there who are interested, you can go to YouTube and pull up my name or in the No Trader, and you'll come across, you know, this past week's podcast. So you can get some strategies on how to kind of chase and play that game. But I don't think that's the best way to play right now. I would go more towards the value names. And here's the thing that I'm most concerned about. If the Democrats don't get a stimulus package passed and Biden's almost $2 trillion attempt and what he's proposing, I don't think is going to come close to passing. I think early weakness in today's Friday's market showed that. And that's my concern, is if the Democrats don't get their act together and do a much more reasonable stimulus package, you're going to lose any of the Republicans that might have swung towards the Democratic side, like Susan Collins of Maine, who today pretty much said this, you know, this deal is silly and I can't vote for it. At which point then I think the S&P is vulnerable for a few hundred point decline. Not because it's going to break the stock market and turn everything around and you know, this is the peak, but just simply because we're really priced for everything to go well. And as I said, nothing's going well now. And I don't see, there's no proof that things are going to go well in the future. There's hope they will, and investors are hoping that things will materially improve. But given that we're still probably not at the worst point of COVID for this winter, and that new strains are coming that maybe the vaccine isn't going to do its job against. I mean, there's still so much up in the air that up here, happy that I'm long, happy that I'm making lots of money, happy that my portfolio is at the highest level it's ever been as far as, you know, total net worth. But I'm not taking any idle cash I have and buying up here. In general terms, I've been telling my institutional clients that in round numbers, I can see the S&P peaking between 3,800 and 4,000 in the early part of 2021 before we get some type of pullback. So that's kind of how I'm playing it.
Okay, so 2 points that I want to touch on here, Rick. It sounds like you are going down the road of still we will see money rotating within the markets, and that's why you're looking at some of these undervalued sectors. But if we do get a quick correction in the S&P, that means that, well, I would think you'd be better off sitting with maybe some more cash. However, cash has been such a losing trade for the last year plus. Where's the balance there?
Yeah. It's, you know, holding cash has not worked at all. And for those who sold out of the stock market in last spring when things fell apart and were looking to get back in, they've just stared at, you know, their screens or the newspaper or TV and see what's going on and have missed the entire rally. So, no, cash has hurt. But at least, look, I'll look at this in two terms, both personally as an investor, but also as, let's say, a professional portfolio manager would do. Let's start on the personal side. I'm never 100% invested in the market because I'm always going to have a certain amount of cash on the sidelines that is there for market declines. And, you know, you should always have cash around in case something goes wrong in life. So there's no such thing to me as an individual investor as being 100% invested. Now, you can be in a retirement plan, but just as far as, you know, a taxable account, to me, there's always money that's sitting around that if opportunities come, I have cash to play. So I like to think of it in those terms that you're never really fully invested as an individual investor. But looking at it in terms as a, let's say, a professional portfolio manager who's basically Let's put them in, not on the hedge fund side, but what we call a long only. So let's say a classic mutual fund portfolio manager. By and large, they're darn close to 100% invested. They may be 97% and leave a little cash for redemptions and in case the market pulls back. But let's just put them in the camp of long only and mostly invested. So the way I would kind of approach 2021 is to do some moderate sector rotation into some of the cyclical areas. Take, for example, and I have yet to make in a portfolio run. You were talking about 7-Eleven. So 7-Eleven, you mentioned, never has more than 7 of the 11 spider sector ETFs invested at one time. But what the goal of 7-Eleven is to outperform the S&P. So my goal is to stay away from the underperforming sectors. And look, mathematically, you can't argue with the fact that if you're in the sectors that outperform or are neutral against the S&P and you can avoid the underperforming sectors, you will outperform the market. So that's the goal of 7-Eleven, not to be less than 5 of the 11 and not to be more than 7 of the 11 with the intent of outperforming. And since we started that on August 1st last summer through year end, and we only calculate once a month, so shortly in, you know, another, I don't know, 8 days or so, we'll have January's results. But we're outperforming the S&P in 5 months by 2.1%. So if I was an actual portfolio manager, that's a huge gain versus the S&P. Most of these guys underperform. I guess I should say most of these guys and gals underperform consistently. So we're outperforming the S&P by using the methodologies I use. Looking at 2021, I've yet to put money into energy, even though it's the best performing sector. And basically, since November 1st of last year, the sector has been on fire. And crude oil has moved from the low 40s to the low 50s. And you're finally seeing some real bidding going on in the energy sector. The thing is that energy was still the worst performing sector last year, the worst performing sector in 2019. And over the last 20 years, a disaster of a sector to be in versus the market. The market's up dramatically. Energy is where it was 20 years ago. So if you looked at let's take the energy ETF, XLE, the S&P Energy Index, that's the ETF. You divide that by the spiders, the S&P, you are actually have lost money you had lost a fair amount. Maybe with the pop we've seen recently, you're getting back to even over the last 20 years as compared to the returns you've gotten in the S&P. So it's been a terrible place. I'm waiting to start seeing some more pieces within energy get upgraded. And upgrade upon upgrade usually leads towards flows into the sector as Wall Street portfolio managers respond to those upgrades. So that's a sector that's certainly on my radar screen. Financials, I think, will do well. They've stalled. The U.S. 10-year stalled right near, I don't know, 113 or so. I think it got as high as 119, but our target was 113. It's right now, it's 1.09%. And if they back down under 1%, you've already seen financials back up in the last week or two off the peaks. Goldman Sachs earnings report made the high print for it, and it's pulled back, I don't know, $20-$30 or so since there. But over time, I actually think financials are going to do well because I do think interest rates will move higher over the course of the year. So that's a sector that only, I think it was December 1st, we finally upgraded and got into. I like industrials. I like materials. I'm still staying away from real estate, utilities, staples. So if I'm going to rotate, I'm probably going to rotate more into the cyclical portion and the part that still can be economically sensitive, whereas I feel that REITs, still not so good. Utilities, still not so good. Energy, questionable. Staples, still not so good. The rest of them, there's 4 right there. So that leaves 7. Those are the other 7 that I tend to prefer with still a good solid weighting in tech. An overweight in tech, an overweight in consumer discretionary, overweight but less so in communication services. Financials, I said, were overweight, and materials were overweight. So those are kind of the sectors I like, and I think the right way to play 2021.
So that's a real mixed bag there, Rick. Some of these point to a better economic restart, but you've even said that there's still a lot of risk factors, especially in the near term when it comes to COVID. So really is a time to be actively managing your money, as crazy as that sounds, simply because these markets have just kept on moving higher and higher. But you also brought up rates, and we have seen rates on the long end especially continue to rise. We might have seen a bit of a topping just this week, but overall we do have the Fed meeting next week, and we don't know what the Fed is going to say, but the comments being we can't have much higher rates in the U.S. because of all this stimulus that has occurred, not just in the U.S., but globally. Where do you land on seeing the market reprice the long end in terms of rates, but understanding that the Fed isn't expected to do anything in terms of increasing the rates that they lead to the market?
Yeah, so the short end of the curve probably stays close to zero. The Fed's told us it's likely to keep that way through 2023, so I have no reason to think that there'll be any material change off of having virtually a zero-type interest rate policy on the short end. The long end, look, in the last several months, we've moved up from 60 basis points to, you know, right near 110 now. So it's almost doubled in price. On the high tick, it virtually doubled in price over the last 3 or 4 months. And I could see that continuing. So I expect the yield curve to continue to widen. There'll be pullbacks along the way, but I don't think we go back to what we saw a few months ago, such that when you see yields pull back and bond prices rally, sorry to say for bondholders, but I just don't, you know, if you're a pension plan, you need to own bonds. If you're an insurance company, you need to own bonds. If you're me and you and the average guy, after 30 years of bonds acting and giving you tremendous annual performance, I don't think it's the time to really be owning bonds anymore. So I would take advantage as an individual investor of using moves in the price of bonds higher to kind of get out of them. Just thinking that rates are likely headed higher over time. I think in the U.S. we showed that they're not going lower than where they were last summer. So I think it got down to 40 basis points or so, 0.4% as the low. And, you know, we've shot back up over 1%. So if we pull back into the 90s or 80s, I'd probably take advantage of that. I just don't think we're going back down under 60 basis points again.
So what do you think that means for inflation then, too? Are we going to see corresponding moves and maybe continued rises or stability at higher levels for inflation?
I think inflation will move higher. On the first page of that supposedly irrelevant factors report, that's my institutional client newsletter that I write Sunday nights every week. On the front page, I keep track of a table that gives a, let's say, a forward look into how investors position relative to their beliefs that inflation is coming or if deflation is coming. And for the last, I'd put it probably close to 10 or 12 weeks, for the last that amount of time, every week the table has shown inflationary pressures down the road, is meaning that investors, professional investors, are positioning their portfolios for inflation down the road. That is the longest string we've seen of consecutive weeks of inflationary fears sometime down the road that we've had since maybe early 2020. So you're starting to see and get hints that PMs are positioning for inflation. And it's what the Fed wants too. Chairman Powell said that he's fine on inflation going above 2%. So they're not going to stop it, but they haven't seen 2% inflation in a long time either. So the Fed has not been able to achieve its goal of 2% inflation. So I do think you're going to see inflation. And if you get, you know, more stimulus and more money into the system, you're going to see more inflation.
How does this all carry over then to commodities and the dollar? Commodities broadly have been rising. The dollar has been under pressure, but it has bounced off of the recent low. But in terms of commodities, you also look at the precious metals, and those have been in a bit of a correction, even as we have seen this higher inflation data. How are you balancing out the two?
Yeah, so the dollar, I think I mentioned this perhaps the last time we spoke a month ago. Coming into 2021, the biggest consensus macro trade on the street from Wall Street strategists and economists is that the dollar would be weak in 2021, and meaning weaker than it came into the year, and considerably so. And that concerned me because I was getting closer to downside exhaustion signals in the dollar, and they are actual place that I recommended clients cover a good portion of dollar shorts using the dollar index as the benchmark was at 89.23, and the low of the whole move was 89.20. So literally 3 pips away from the low, and now we're at 90.21, so we're essentially one full point higher. And I'm looking for a dollar bounce here that continues simply because the street is so short the dollar. And if interest rates do start moving higher, even above where we are now, that should help the dollar too. And it may be the only place in the world you actually can get some true yield. So I think the dollar actually can bounce more than it's already done. And I think anywhere from this year's low at 89.20 down towards kind of 87.5 or so is the likely place that I would rein in the almost all of my dollar shorts, believing that the street is notorious for getting the dollar wrong when they come into the year with such consensus of what the dollar is going to do. And I'll give you an example. The last time this happened was in early winter 2016, right after Donald Trump had won the presidential election, the dollar soared. And again, the biggest macro consensus call on the street is that the dollar would soar in 2017. It actually peaked its very first day of trading in the year and sold off for the balance of the year, closing almost on the low of the year. So Wall Street got it 100% incorrect. And they may very well have done that again this year. So at least from a tactical point of view, I'm bullish the dollar. Up to maybe 93 to 94, then I can reevaluate and possibly put on more shorts or not. But down here, I kind of just don't love betting against the dollar. And if we do get any further rally in the dollar, you'd have to expect that to affect other commodity prices. So another big call out there is that commodities are going to soar, and that we're starting a whole super cycle for commodities. I'm not there on that call. I can see why people are thinking that way, but you know, that would assume the dollar would have to really plunge, and I'm just not there yet. So no surprise, you know, gold peaked in August last year. It's been able to do nothing since. Back in 2011, when gold peaked, I think the front month futures contract, the all-time high was $1,924. So with gold at about $1,850, we're still under that all-time peak, which means that you could have a double top in gold, you know, and it's a long-term one. Now, from basic technical analysis, you can't call it a double top yet. We haven't sold off enough to define what last year's high was as being a true secular high. But I tend to be a contrarian. And right now, the amount of bullishness on gold and bearishness on the dollar has me somewhat concerned.
How about for base metals then? We've already talked about kind of your general economic outlook, but with all this money being printed and with this new Biden administration, we're hearing more about infrastructure bills. And we are seeing some of these so-called critical elements and minerals get bid up, as well as copper. It's quite frankly, right, just getting bid up. What's your outlook there? You're also, I'm assuming, seeing maybe a bit of a slowdown in that upward momentum?
We are. We're actually short copper at almost the high print of the whole move, 373, and it got to just a little above 373. So I'm actually short copper right now. It's trading 360, just shy of 362. So we're up a little bit, a few percent on it. I'm looking to cover it down somewhere in the upper 340s. So I'll still stick with it. I have no risk on the upside versus, you know, potential to make, I don't know, 8% or so on the downside. So I'm going to stick with it right now. Again, the metals, especially copper, is priced for perfection. It's priced that China is continually going to be a buyer. They're the world's biggest buyer. Look at the chart of copper, and you might, if you took the scale and the prices away, you might think you're looking at the S&P. It has moved virtually identical to the S&P since the March low last year. So it too is saying tremendous recovery coming, global demand for copper to be, you know, very strong in the future. It traded from under $2 in New York at its lows to now 362. Big, you know, move. And I just think the market, even the base metals are ahead of themselves right now. I'm long some of them in my own account, for instance. I've been long XME, which is an ETF that's a base metal ETF for a couple of years already. So it was a little early on getting in, but you know, it was kind of an investment over time, and I'm long at, I think, 26, so it's trading 34 and a half. I'm doing fine on it. But right now, would I be buying it? No. Would I be buying copper? No.
All right, Rick, we'll wrap it up there. It's always great having you on the show, buddy. Sorry for all the commodity bulls out there to end on that note, but hey, Rick has outlined what and why he is thinking that way. And you know what, Rick, you have been pretty spot on throughout our conversations all through last year, so I put a lot of credence in what you have to say. Rick, everybody else, have a great rest of your weekend. I thank you all for joining me. I will be back at it Monday morning. Please, everybody, keep those emails coming, fleck@kereport.com. Have a great weekend, everyone.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.